Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. Foreign diplomats in Juba ask the Kiir administration to allow freedom of speech in South Sudan.
Let me not hate the rest. Okay, the tribe which have caused the loss in our family, let us unite together for the development of this country.
And the UN donates money for cleaning towns in South Sudan.
This amount was exactly granted was $1,610,000. This is what was promised and will be given to beneficiaries we are identified.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. On the eve of World Press Freedom Day, foreign diplomats in South Sudan are urging the Kiir administration to respect the freedom of the press and allow journalists to operate without fear. The diplomats say the government is responsible for creating a safer working environment for journalists in South Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Gerard Gwet is the ambassador of Netherlands. He says Western diplomats in Juba have repeatedly reminded the Kiir administration to respect the universal rights, including press freedom.
Every occasion that we get, of course, is the need for the South Sudanese government to respect the freedom of expression, since they are now an independent country, a member of the United Nations. The membership of the United Nations brings with it the obligation to respect this right.
Ambassador Gwet says South Sudanese should know the truth about what is going on in their country so that they can make choices. He says the government should allow people to express views on the various issues in South Sudan. The British ambassador to South Sudan, Alison Blackburn, says Western diplomats are aware of many challenges facing South Sudanese journalists and media houses.
We all support the fundamental rights of the journalists and indeed the people of South Sudan to freedom of expression. It's vitally important that what is going on in the country and what people are saying about what is going on in the country is reported accurately so that the people of South Sudan can make their own choices and have their own views about the future of the country.
The Norwegian ambassador to South Sudan, Gunnar Andres Holm, says South Sudanese authorities should ensure that journalists do their work without fear. He says the government has a responsibility to ensure that journalists not punished for criticizing the government. Holm says democratic society should respect the freedom of his speech.
If you want a society where the best ideas prevail, that's a crucial freedom to have that right to exchange arguments, to criticize bad ideas, and to basically adjust the course.
The Western diplomat spoke to reporters today shortly after touring a resource center at the Office of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS. The diplomats pledged to support the development of the media in South Sudan. Dutch Ambassador Gwet says journalists need to be professional in their reporting.
Journalism, of course, is a very responsible job, and it has to be done in a very professional way. So it's a job that you have to learn. So that's why I think this resource center is very important. And where we get the opportunity, of course, we are supporting the strengthening of the professionalism of journalists in this country, because it is important, especially in times of conflict and in times of war, to know what the truth is. There is a saying, when the war starts or a conflict starts, the first victim in that war is truth. And it's the task of journalism, of course, in journalists to discover the truth.
South Sudan is ranked 144 out of 180 countries in this year's Press Freedom Index, released last week by the media watchdog Reporters Without Borders. The South Sudan Media Authority has been cracking down on various media houses, including the UN's Radio Miraya. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Several countries have issued a joint statement to condemn attacks on aid workers in South Sudan. The United States, Canada, Denmark, the European Union, France, Germany, Japan, the Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom say they are concerned by the deteriorating security conditions in South Sudan. The statement describes the April 10 targeted attack on the International Committee of the Red Cross compound in Leer as alarming. The attack forced ICRC to evacuate staff and suspend activities in the area, leaving 16,000 South Sudanese without assistance. The statement comes just a couple of days after the SPLM-IO released 10 aid workers in Yei. In early April, the SPLM in opposition also abducted 7 aid workers in Yei River State. The next phase of the high-level revitalization forum is yet to begin in Addis Ababa, but the diaspora here in the United States is already thinking ahead and asking the United States to step in if the talks failed. Robin Garang, the president of the Coalition of Advocates for South Sudan, tells INBR IGAD has not made any changes to its approach on the high-level talks, and he says he's afraid the regional body could repeat the mistakes of 2011.
The negotiation has been ongoing, and seeing the situation in a country where more than half of the population is displaced, and, you know, everything is not working for the benefit of the ordinary people in a country now, and knowing that the regional bloc, IGAD, is also concerned. And we're hoping that they are concerned about the negative impact of the war. So what we're saying is that if the next peace round is going to fail, like the other peace round have failed, we're suggesting that, you know, the venue need to be changed. And the only the other group that could do this would be the government of the United States of America, because the people in the government, the people in the oppositions, see themselves have no problem with the government of the United States. So if they organize a forum for peace, these parties will come.
But the high-level revitalization forum is backed by the United States.
It's backed by the United States, but we are saying that, you know, there's a need of a change of a venue if the next peace round failed.
Could you tell me exactly what you mean by a change in venue? Are you saying that the peace talks should not be in Addis Ababa?
Oh, for now, we're saying that it should be there. It should be in Addis Ababa. And when we're talking about the change of the venue, it's the active involvement of the United States government, because they are the ones that are supporting the peace process. And so if the effort by IGAD is not bearing fruit, then we have to find alternatives.
And what can the U.S. do differently that IGAD is not doing right now?
One of them is you know, including more participation of the group that I named. So you know, so that there's honest discussions by the people of South Sudan to you know, the situation itself, because they are the ones that are affected.
Your organization, the Coalition of Advocates for South Sudan, says the peacemaking process for South Sudan is failing. Why is it failing?
I think all of us have seen that, you know, and I think, you know, I don't want to speculate of why it is failing, but it has failed a number of times, and the suffering is not ending. So we wanted to see something that will...
But part of finding a solution is trying to figure out why it failed in the first place. So it's, you're arguing that it's failing. Is it not true that we need to understand why it is failing so that we can maybe find a solution?
Well, I think one of the things is very clear, that when the leaders come to Addis Ababa, they are negotiating position. They are not negotiating the causes, the root cause of the war. They're not looking into the suffering of the people. They are looking into who will get what positions. And also, you know, these are the people that are fighting. So when they come there, they have emotions, and they are trying to manage their emotions. You know, they are emptying their chest on the feast table, where they are supposed to be looking critically onto what happened and what needs to be done. And we're not saying that they should not do that, but they've been doing that repeatedly. We're suggesting that there should be more voices from the civil organization, from the diaspora, from, the churches, so that environment is changed. You know, what is happening between our leaders is not looking deep into the causes of the problem. It's not looking deep into what will get the country out where it is now to a new direction, you know, so that there's peace in the country. Look, how many people are affected by this conflict? There's so many people. But when the leaders come to Addis Ababa, do you hear that? Do you see the concern? It's about who will get what positions. It's about whether the government needs to be expanded while there are no resources actually in the country. So what we are saying is that let the warring parties come, but give more voices to the people of South Sudan so that there are more people on the table to be able to, you know, tell our leaders that, you know, enough is enough. You know, we need something else. We need peace. We don't need the continuation of the war. We wanted the peace process in Addis Ababa to bear fruit, to bring change that the people of South Sudan need now. You know, people need a change now, and that change is a change of the current situation to a peaceful situation. We want to see that. But if it does not succeed, then we don't need to give up. We need to find another way of doing it.
That was Ruben Garang, the president of the Coalition of Advocates for South Sudan, speaking to Ayen Deng Bior from Saskatchewan, Canada, earlier today. The United Nations Office for Project Services has donated more than $1.6 million to Bor Municipality to improve hygiene and sanitation in Bor Town. Residents of Bor say they have welcomed the initiative but urge the state authorities to use the money for cleaning the town. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has the story from Bor.
James Guy Makur is the mayor of Bor Municipality. He says his office will use the funds to hire 6,000 workers to clean up the town, plant trees and flowers for the next 3 months.
UNOPS just is now supporting the 11 quarters in Bor Municipal Council, and this amount was exactly granted was $1,610,000. This is what was promised and will be given to beneficiaries we are identified. So we as a municipal council will be responsible for monitoring and show them a place supposed to be done.
Mayor Guy says each worker will be paid $90 per month.
They will be monitored by Bor Municipal Council for cleaning, general cleaning the Bor in town, and drainage system also. They will open a drainage system in the whole areas which was opened by the authorities of Bor Town.
Bor resident Simon Dengs hails UNOPS for donating the money. Deng says he believes if the fund is used properly, Bor Town will tackle the poor hygiene and sanitation problems.
I'm very appreciative for the offering that the UNOPS have done. I thank them, and I want to encourage all the residents to put all the efforts so that they implement this project very well, so that our city, our town will be clean, and it will reduce the number of the cases like health hygiene-related cases of sicknesses.
But another Bor resident, Mamra Nyuan, says it is the work of municipal authorities to ensure proper hygiene and sanitation in the towns.
The health, it is an individual duty that you should do it individually. So even if we have been given incentives that will sustain these people until the time of 3 months, I think it will be a routine for them to do it continually until they will find their own ground for setups when the government will be okay and pay them without any begging from the donors.
Beth Ekarayende is the UNOPS project support officer. She says they are implementing what she calls a catch for work project in Bor, Pibor and Kapoita. She says UNOPS will be paying the workers directly. Bor Municipality collects monthly tax from traders operating in Bor Town. But the mayor of Bor Town says his office has no money for cleaning the town. For VOA News, I am Denga Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new program teaches students peace education. Stay tuned for that story.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your definition of bad manners?
Lack of respect. These days, children don't respect elders. They can insult them. Sometimes even they cannot feel like greeting them, which is not good. Careless language.
Well, I will talk about bad manners. Bad manners to me is relative, because what is bad to me may not be bad to you. As in, what people consider as bad manners depend on their own values.
When we talk about the bad manners, this is the behaviors in the society which is not allowed in the community, for example.
Anything that doesn't speak of you in a right way, like somebody who is not properly trained.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A Juba-based aid agency has developed peace education activities to help students learn how to coexist peacefully. The Children Initiative for Learning and Development formed a club called Hadia, which means gift in Arabic. It gives students an opportunity to nurture talents and learn new skills for peaceful coexistence. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Hadia Club teaches students about peace building and conflict resolution. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says the ongoing war has prevented many children from attending schools. 17-year-old Martha Chow is a senior 4 student at Juba Diocesan Modern School. She says she joined Hadia to become a peace ambassador in high school and community. Chow lost her father in 2013 during fighting in Nimule. She says she is ready to forgive and coexist with other communities.
Let me not hate the rest, the tribe which have caused the loss in our family. Let us unite together for the development of this country. The Lord is the one who is always sending peace to our hearts. Then the Lord will give them the strength to make the country all united so that peace will be here in this country.
Chow and dozens of other Hadia Club members will produce songs, drama, and poetry focusing on peace. 17-year-old Alfred Alonai hopes Hadia will help him promote peace in his community. Alonai says he worries about his future because the ongoing war will disrupt his school calendar. Alonai says he is still traumatized by the July 2016 fighting that erupted in Juba.
I was learning, running mad. I don't know what was happening. So we went through that parliamentary road, the J1. So for that case, someone was shot just behind me, leaving me in front. At first, I didn't fear. Rushing for my life, I left the person.
Alonai says the 2016 fighting in the capital affected his studies. Busiri Julius Barsuk is the research manager at the Children's Initiative for Learning and Development, or the CHILD, an NGO working to promote girls and boys to become responsible citizens. Barsuk says the government must invest in educating young people. He says his organization has developed activities and comic books to help students learn about conflict resolution and peace building in their communities.
Every week we have a club session in the schools. And then when we leave the students, they sit in their smaller groups of 10 to 12 students. Then they discuss further based on the activities in the activity book. The activity book has a total of 70 activities aimed at making these students understand the comic book better, understand their lives better, and understand the lessons that we put forward in the program.
Charity Corio teaches students at Hadia Club. She says she hopes the effort will show them how to coexist peacefully, helping them building a better and stable South Sudan.
It is really hard for us to be here because lack of peace brings a lot of negative things in our country. We have this economic crisis. The country is not stable as we can speak currently. The dollar rate has gone high and it is affecting prices in the market. And being a teacher, you know the salary of a teacher, how much it is.
The Peace Education Project is sponsored by the Swiss Agency for Development and Cooperation in South Sudan. So far, the Juba Diocesan Modern School is the only high school implementing the program in Juba. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Still on education programs, the South Sudan government says enrollment of girls in schools has improved over the past few years. Education Minister Deng Deng Hawk says girls' enrollment in schools increased from 17% to 48% over the past 5 years. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
We need girls to be educated, free education, virtual education.
Pupils of orphanage Straight Link Nursery and Primary School singing a song calling on authorities to invest more in educating the girl child across South Sudan. But government officials say cultural barriers remain a major challenge to girl child education in the country. The government launch of a second phase of the five-year National Girls Education Strategy 2018-2022 aims at boosting girls' education across the country by creating a safe and a conducive learning environment. Education Minister Deng says girls' enrollment now stands at 48%, while boys' enrollment stands at 52%. He says the National Girls' Education Strategy aims to fight cultural barriers to girl child education in the country.
In our society, many only take boys to school, and the girls are not taken to school on the basis that they are going to be married. And that is what is preventing girls from enrolling in schools. But even when girls enroll in schools, they are subjected to early marriage. In some cases, arranged early marriage. And in some others, the girl may be persuaded, may be involved in the decision-making process. But in the end, the decision is made too early, before the girl is 18, and that disrupts her education.
The government is challenging patriarchal norms that favor boys as the heir of family lineage in South Sudan. The strategy notes that girls in South Sudan do most of the domestic chores as compared to boys. Nibol is a primary 8 pupil at the orphanage Straight Link Primary School in Juba. She says she struggles to be in school.
Yeah, that late coming, like, especially when you're a girl, you must first wake up in the morning, you do domestic work, like, clean the compound, wash the utensils, fetching water. So that one makes a girl to go to school late.
The first phase of the National Girls Education Strategy was launched in 2015 to 2017. The project was funded by the UK government, which allocated £60 million for the project. The project helped girls with the cash transfer program, training of teachers, head teachers, and school inspectors. Deng says the British government has agreed to fund the second phase of the project.
We also want to tackle school-specific challenges like lack of toilet, lack of a school meal. So we are working with World Food Program to ensure that the school meals are provided. We are working with UNICEF and other partners to ensure that wash facilities are available, especially toilets and access to clean drinking water. But we are also aiming to recruit more female teachers.
The second phase of the project will include gender in education programs across the country. Awut Deng Achwil is the South Sudanese Minister of Gender. The gender minister calls on South Sudanese authorities to implement the General Education Act and Child Act, which addresses some of the many challenges facing girl child education.
Those parents who keep children at home will be punished in accordance with the law. All children must be allowed to go to school in accordance with the law. And they must also be allowed to stay in school. Child marriage is prohibited by Child Act.
The Minister of Education says only 27% of the country's population is literate. 4.8% of the South Sudan budget is allocated for education. The General Education Act requires the government to allocate 10% of its annual budget to the education sector. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
As we told you yesterday, Israel scrapped plans to deport thousands of African migrants after political dissent in the Israeli parliament over the matter. That means the migrants, most of whom are Eritrean and Sudanese, will stay in Israel for now. Reporter Ismail Kushkush is in Tel Aviv this week and tells Carol Van Damme that only a very small percentage of African migrants living in Israel have received refugee status despite ongoing violence in their countries.
Out of the 40,000 Africans that are here, only 10 have received refugee status, permanent refugee status, and they're able to, you know, to study, to work. But most, depending on what their exact legal condition is, are different. I mean, some stay from Darfur, but Darfur ends up being given a particular visa that allows them to work and apply, you know, to different places. But others, like, you know, so the Eritreans, so those of moving out here are granted a special humanitarian status, but that doesn't really give them the right to work. But, you know, some do, again, like I said, under the tables.
In a statement that Netanyahu recently made to The Guardian, he said he recently visited the area south Tel Aviv, and he said, "I saw the suffering of the Israelis living there, and we said that we have to remove the problem." What is he referring to when he talks about the suffering of the Israelis living there?
South Tel Aviv is a working-class neighborhood. Most of its inhabitants are, you know, from Eastern Europe, some from the Middle Eastern Jewish communities. They've complained that the African refugees living in this area have contributed to crime, to insecurity, to drugs. And many of the Israelis that support political parties to the right, some who are part of the coalition, and some the same parties that have been putting pressure on, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu. So, I mean, it's not surprising that he would come to this area to speak to the residents of this area and to address their concerns.
Is there anything you wanted to point out that now that you've been there, you've noticed, that you've seen happening on the ground that I've not asked you about?
This is a serious, it's a political issue that has divided Israeli society. I mean, it's almost similar to the way that, you know, the election of Donald Trump in the U.S. has divided families and ignited debates. It's almost the same thing here. Because it is ignited the discussion on the purpose of Israel, the purpose of the Jewish state, that the state was created to host refugees coming from conflict zones, from war-torn areas, from genocide in Europe. And now that they face, you know, the challenge of hosting refugees who are mostly non-Jewish from other places, can this state play the role that it says that it was established for? There's a big
That's a reporter Ismail Kushkush, who is in Israel this week covering the African migrant story. We apologize for the quality of that line. He was speaking to Carol Van Damme from South Tel Aviv. That brings us to the end of our story of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Sotfa by Sudanese music star late Muhammad Wardi. We have been listening to a test of that music by late Muhammad Wardi. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Let us know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. نور عيني يا ما حبيته